episode of the Data Protection and Privacy Podcast is brought to you by The Trustbridge, www.thetrustbridge.co.uk.
Hello, this is David Clark. Today I'm to Robert Ball, and he is founder and CEO at Keepable Limited. Hi, Robert. I've got to say, I've been reading your articles a while now. And I loved your one on the ISO 27001. I wonder if you could maybe give us a bit of background on that one.
Thanks very much, David. Yes, it's a pleasure to be on the podcast, and I read your articles too, so the feeling's mutual. That 27001, I found it just an immense shock, and it's a fundamental piece of research, I think, in terms of on the IAPP privacy stack. There was a lot of email around 27701, the privacy extension to 27001. So already for a lot of people, they'll be going, what are they talking about? So ISO 27001, the international standard for security. And then that's very well known. Security obviously is a huge industry. CISO is a recognized role, lots of budget. Get a sort of official tick box that we're GDPR compliant. And the ISO, the International Standards Organization, created an extension to 27001. So you need 27001 first. And it's all based on privacy. So I did a bit of research on, well, how well adopted is 27001? And it's ridiculously badly adopted. So there's only 30,000 certificates worldwide, just over 30,000 certificates worldwide in 2018.
Yeah,
it's worldwide. So in the UK, we've got 2.5 million businesses that are either VAT or PAYE registered. There's about 5 million in total. But taking those 2.5 million, we're at 0.1% adoption on 27001 because there's 2,400 ISO certificates. And even worse, 14 of the 30 EEA countries have fewer than 100 27001 certificates. So fewer than 100. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant from a mass adoption point of view. It's highly relevant if you're going for a customer and they say you have to have 27001. It's incredibly relevant. But from a is this going to be the answer for GDPR compliance? And it's just not, unfortunately. I hope it gets certified, officially approved, and all anything like that is good. But I just think it's not going to make it.
And there's kind of other areas, isn't there? Because with ISO, company can scope it. So once a company gets to a certain size, it's almost impossible to do an ISO for the whole company. So I'm assuming the add-on would only be applicable to the ISO 27000 in scope. It wouldn't go beyond this.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And actually, what's very interesting about that comment is, which is a great comment, because in the paper as well, I thought, well, actually, that's an interesting lesson from security. So why aren't people adopting it? And hang on a minute, there's Cyber Essentials in the UK, which is a lot easier. So Cyber Essentials, a real stripped down version, five main things you go for, like, you know, changing passwords, having a good firewall, all this sort of stuff. And so I thought, well, that's got to be a lot better. So the NCSC survey released in June last year, said there were 30,000 Cyber Essentials certificates since it started. Now, if assuming they're all valid, assuming they're all current, that's only 1.1% of UK business. And we're not talking about public sector here, we're talking about UK business. Even that is not there. And when you look at the reasons that people gave for not going for Cyber Essentials, the reasons were it's too expensive, it's too complex, we're not sure which certifier is good or not. And then your point, for the vendor due diligence, it didn't help because people weren't sure, did that certificate just cover the sales team operations? Did it cover the whole office? Did it cover the whole company? Because you can go for a certificate for certain teams, certain aspects, certain locations. And I think the problem with the GDPR certifications, unfortunately, is going to be very much the same thing until there's something really, really super, super simple. And I think that's where, you know, Cyber Essentials is 11 times better in the UK than 27001. But if you look at, you know, fewer than 100 27001 certificates in half Europe, it's Germany has the highest in Europe, 1,040, which is nothing. So it's everyone in Europe is at 0.0x% adoption of 27001. So even if you 11 times those, you're still nowhere. You've got to make it simpler and simpler and simpler.
Yeah, I mean the interesting thing about ISO, you know, it generally, from what I've seen, it was a big company thing. And what I've seen in the last couple of years is actually I've had very small companies say, can you help us with ISO 27001? Mainly because they weren't able to do business with bigger companies unless they had something they could demonstrate, you know, their cybersecurity posture.
Absolutely.
Which I think kind of leads us on to, you know, something we were just talking about. How do you demonstrate compliance?
Well, that's right. I mean, taking your point about the small company. So 27001, I think, is generally a larger one, but smaller ones get into it. When I got the budget for an international group through 27001, when sales got fed up filling in 40 pages of an RFP instead of ticking the box, you know. So having a way to demonstrate, often businesses will only go for it when they get that sort of commercial hit. But the GDPR is in vendor due diligence now, is in investor due diligence. It's financial institutions have it in their internal audit. How do you get, if you deal with the public sector at all, you've got to be GDPR compliant. So how do you demonstrate that? It's a really tough question. And that's why businesses are so hopeful about 27701, because they're just hoping for anything that they can say this is an official compliance flag.
Of course.
And
of course.
I just think it's going to come down in the end of the day to essentially what the security bit comes down to. It comes down to a risk. It's risk management. It's risk based. Yeah. It comes down to the purchaser's risk decision on that supplier, because that's just one aspect of the vendor due diligence. You've got financial stability, et cetera, and all this sort of stuff as well. Location, geolocation is a country risk, and even more. So the demonstrating compliance, well, that's actually partly why I created Keepable.
Yeah, it's because it's interesting. You sort of mentioned, you know, financial due diligence is kind of well understood. And, you know, I know we've seen in the news that companies have acquired other companies and effectively bought themselves a breach. You know, data and cyber due diligence is now getting more and more important as well, isn't it? Being able to, how do you demonstrate that?
Absolutely. They're buying a breach. That's absolutely well put. And so for example, when I was general counsel of VC backed SaaS companies for 13 years before founding Keepable. So I've sort of been the customer where you've got all these complex things, be it health and safety or all the different HR regs or your security or data protection, and you're trying to make them all simple for the business to take on because they're already doing complex everywhere. So you're managing the risk, but you're also trying to capture reward. So you're trying to overcome sales objections, you're trying to overcome investor objections. And actually, Cisco's got some great benchmark studies, 2018, 19, and 20. And 18 and 19 really showed how there's a lot of sales delay if you can't demonstrate your GDPR compliance. So that's where I sort of created Keepable. I was looking at other SaaS products and thought, actually, these are all great for enterprise, but not for mass adoption. So I created Keepable as a simple way for businesses to get compliant in the first place, maintain it easily, and then actually demonstrate that easily to others. And what we're finding in our conversations with the market at the moment, when we're talking to prospects and what have you, all of our customers come to us and they've already done quite a lot of stuff on GDPR.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not sure how to marshal that together, how to actually see where they are themselves and then confidently show that to someone else. And that's where we're winning a lot, because it's a way to easily see where you are and easily show it to someone else. And I think that's going to be the way that it goes, rather than...
That makes sense. Yeah. I know it's something you're very kind of strong on. When we spoke earlier, you know, you said make it simple, then make it simple again, then make it simpler again.
Exactly.
I think the problem is none of this stuff is straightforward, unfortunately.
Well, we were talking about the DPO role and how misunderstood we think that is. And if in our sort of rarefied world of experts on data protection can argue about whether someone's a controller or a processor or whether someone's, you know, what DPO is and stuff, it's like how is the general business meant to just crack on and deal with it? And do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
I said this as well with there was a great paper produced for the European Parliament about blockchain just last summer, and it said there's two difficulties with blockchain and GDPR. One is blockchain in itself has some features that go against GDPR, but the other thing is GDPR itself is so ambiguous and unknown that some of the things aren't fine. It's very hard to apply GDPR to any technology because it's hard to know what GDPR is. So you've got all this context. You've got professionals all arguing. So 27701 is going to be complex. It's part of 27001. No matter, you know, if you're, I'm a big fan of 27001. I've put people through it. I love it to death, but it is not simple. Cyber Essentials is super simple compared to it, and still people don't want to do it. So the lesson from security from that research is, as you say, make it simple. Make it simple again, and make it simpler again, and keep going. And I think that's the big problem at the moment.
Yeah, no, I think it is fascinating. And we were kind of talking earlier a little bit about your background, and from a very unique perspective, because I've been on calls, for example, where I've had DPOs and CISOs on the same call, and the minute I mentioned anything to do with cyber technology, the DPOs wanted to get off the call. And I guess with your kind of background, you're often talking to DPOs, you're talking to cyber, and you're talking to legal. And how do you get them all on the same page and aligned?
Well, it's interesting that, because in a certain size of business, they're often all in the same room when we're doing the demo meeting. And privacy tech is bought half the time it's bought by IT or security, and the other half of the time it's bought by legal or compliance. Yeah. And so when you look at it, so I'm often in a meeting with someone from security, someone from in inverted commas compliance. And I put that in inverted commas because it could be someone who deals with, say, health and safety, HR, or it could be, if it's a financial place, a full-on sort of CCO from a financial house, CF10, this sort of stuff. But they necessarily won't be dealing with some of the other bits. So legal tends to try, and I certainly, when I was general counsel, I tended to try and stay advisory. So I didn't want to be operational, because otherwise I'd have a lot more people, and I was the sort of the point of the spear advisory on everything that was going on, rather than like a DPO is meant to be. So really the idea, I think, if you look at Data Protection World Forum rebranded as PrivSec, and I think that's a really classic thing, because a lot of people who are coming and holding data protection at the moment are from the world of security, which is great because it's very fundamental, but there's a negative there in terms of there's often a feeling to stay with security and not look at the other aspects without meaning any disrespect. And so you often find teams are there together because they each bring their very relevant perspective, security, compliance, ops as well, COOs we talk to a lot. And legal, actually, we come across quite rarely. They tend to be more, as I say, advisory, less operational, and they've pushed it off to ops or IT or compliance, which I think is right.
I guess so. I mean, where a company, I suppose, gets to a certain size, even SARs are not straightforward, because sometimes you need to fly them past, HR, security, legal, sales, marketing, just to make sure that A, you've got the data and it's appropriate to release that data. So, the 30 days becomes very, very difficult, doesn't it? And, facilities, when they've got the CCTV,
absolutely,
it's getting all these departments involved and explaining what we can and what we maybe shouldn't be doing.
Well, I think that's another great comment in terms of it's a team sport, privacy. And, in the same way that they say privacy is the new cyber, but I think there's a big shortfall at the moment where security has gone through a decades of proving itself, growing up, stats about how big a risk it is. Now, security and cybersecurity are top draw sort of risks that the board look at. And privacy, in a way, because GDPR, pre-GDPR, people used to privacy policy, cookie notice, okay, we're done. Yeah. And you'd be like, no, you've got to do more. And it was so hard to get people to do more. GDPR came in with the massive fines and put it onto the board, but there was no one that the supply of qualified people to talk about it was suited to the world where the demand was pre-GDPR days. Yes, so there's been this massive catch up, as IAPP said, however many thousand DPOs were needed and what have you. But there's been, people are playing catch up. So there's a lot of people out there who also feel very vulnerable as DPOs because they don't necessarily know it that well, and they haven't had the experience. And I think the safety net for them is to open up about that. And there's other people with experience in the business. Mm. And as I say, it's a team sport and everyone's learning. And Tash Whitaker, another great consultant on deep data protection, was very clearly said at this point, we should all be supporting each other and not going to cut anyone down because everybody's learning. And now, there are obviously some people who know quite a lot about it, but for the vast majority of people practicing privacy in businesses, they're feeling very vulnerable.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the thing is, you know, we talked about DPOs pre-GDPR. I think post-GDPR, I think we're expecting anyone in that area to know absolutely everything. They've got to know legal bit, they know IT infrastructure, they've got to understand cybersecurity. It's, you know, a huge amount of information that you need to understand to be able to, you know, facilitate some of the components.
Absolutely. And it's also one of the things we talked about was do you need a DPO? I think the role of the DPO is massively misunderstood. There's the need for a DPO is massively overestimated. You know, I think you can, you know, DPOs should not be conflicted. We mentioned the example from Germany where a DPA fined a company for using its IT manager as the DPO because they were conflicted. Obviously, in Germany, it's a different situation with DPO, but in the UK, in terms of DPO, we're looking at the GDPR requirements, and that's really, you know, tough to fall into for a private sector business. So most private sector businesses, particularly smaller ones, you know, will not really need a DPO. Definitely have a privacy champion. Definitely have a privacy officer who champions GDPR, but you generally don't need a DPO. And if you make someone in a small business DPO, you've likely just shot yourself in the foot because they're conflicted, because they're probably the person that is writing the procedures, doing the DPIAs, looking into
policies. Yes, of course.
And that's not, you know, they're marking their own homework.
Yeah, then that does make it, you know, a lot tougher, definitely. I mean, where do you suggest that, you know, companies get advice from on this? I mean, is there anything straightforward they can do? Because obviously reading the regulation doesn't really help. A number of times I've heard the companies and they say, well, work through it, articles 1 to 99, and you explain it's not going to help you. You know, it's layered, it's circular, it self-refers. You can't do this in a linear process.
That's right. And I think if you look at, I basically call GDPR its own ISO anyway, though we don't need an ISO. GDPR is its own ISO. Yes. It's a set of rules. It's a risk-managed, risk-based approach to those rules. So you need to take those rules away and work out how you implement them in the appropriate manner in your business. And so it is its own ISO. And there's all these guidelines, which are like 27002, for those who know about 27002. Yeah. So you've got the GDPR and all the guidelines. And I think really the way that I've seen companies going at it is they'll typically ask their lawyers first for some strategic steer. Being a lawyer, I can say this. I don't think lawyers have covered ourselves in glory in terms of law firms have gone in saying, you want to pay about $5,000. They end up paying about $15,000. They end up with a huge amount of documents. And they go, I don't know any more than when I started, and I'm not left with any signposts about going forward. I've spent all my money and more. I don't want to hear GDPR ever again. And so people are turning a lot to data protection consultants. And I think that's also right. I think it is right to get strategic steer from lawyers, and enlightened lawyers are now looking at, actually, we get a lot of referrals from law firms, and it's a bit bizarre to call it law as a service because law should be a service. But it's this new way of providing law where they go, look, we want to keep the relationship going with you. So why don't you use something like Keepable? We can get emails when there's email alerts when there's a breach, and we can help you on it, et cetera. We can have access to it, so we see where you are. And it means the law firm charges less generally, but they're involved with the customer. They've got billing opportunities when there's big breaches or DSRs and that sort of stuff. But they become, you know, it's all part of the trusted advisor bit rather than just trying to dinosaurish do an hourly rate and let's get a big bill in.
That makes a lot of sense. We're sort of coming near the end. So, Robert, is there any kind of one or two bits of advice you would give to businesses or what they could do now to help them along their data privacy journey?
Absolutely. So from thanks very much. So from the conversations in the market have really changed over the last 18 months. So 18 months ago, I would have been saying, just do something about GDPR. And it's more than a privacy policy. Now, actually, the conversations we're having with customers is most prospects have been doing something about GDPR. It's all spread around the place a bit. I think the first thing I would say is it's not security. So make sure you approach it from the privacy viewpoint. Security is fundamental, but it's not all of it. Second thing I would say is try and find a way to bring it all together and save yourself time, cost, and stress. And obviously, I would say that I'm a provider of a service that can help with that. I would also then say the last one. Yeah, and the last thing I would say, the third thing I would say is make it a team sport. Find external support to help your guys. It's a risk-based approach. It's much better to have a go and have five DPIAs done, data protection impact assessments, that you've really shown you've thought about it. You might not have got it 100% right, but it's much better to have had a go with an external data protection consultant to help you through that than to just go, you know what, I'm not going to address any of this. It's too difficult. So make it a team sport. Don't put a single person into a really vulnerable position and therefore your business as well.
Wow. Thanks so much, Robert. Yeah, I've learned time just from talking to you the last 20 minutes. That's amazing. If anybody listening wants to get in touch with you and Keepable, what should they do?
Fantastic. Thank you. So through keepable.com, there's a contact us there. You can also email us at hello@keepable.com. You can email me at robertb@keepable.com. We're on Twitter at Keepable. I'm at RJ Bohr, and we're on LinkedIn, obviously, as well. So any of those channels would be great.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And I'm sure we're going to be talking again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. So that's Keepable bringing you the Data Protection and Privacy podcast. If you need help with your privacy, do contact us through keepable.com or hello@keepable.com or on Twitter @keepable. We'd love to hear from you. And keep listening to the podcast. Keep getting up and good luck with your GDPR journey.